This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, well, I will go ahead. I'd like to call this meeting of the University Assembly to order. It's August 4th, 2020. This is a special meeting of the University Assembly. I've called it to discuss events that are going on with the reopening of the campus and give the University Assembly members a chance to discuss and perhaps weigh in. Just to clarify, the membership of the UA for this meeting is still from the 2019 to 2020 membership, minus those whose terms expired in May. So we're down to 17 members and a quorum is 9. So with that, either Wendy or Gina, can you call the roll, please?
Okay.
I'll go ahead and call the roll. Andy Barrientos Gomez. Christopher Barth. Uche Chukwukere.
Here.
Cody Duell.
Here.
Brandon Fortenberry. David Heiner.
I'm here.
Alex Hong.
Here.
Robert Howarth.
Here.
Adam Howell.
Here.
Logan Kenny.
Here.
Carolyn Levine.
Here.
Gavin Martin. Renelle Mensah.
Here.
Deborah Niakaru. Jeff P.
Here.
Pilar Thompson.
Here.
Charlie Van Loan.
Here.
Those are the voting members of the assembly.
Okay, thank you. We do have a quorum. Our rules of order.
Real quick, my name's Thomas Fox. Am I supposed to be here? I was appointed as of June, I thought.
You're not yet a voting member. You're actually appointed as of the fall. You're welcome to be here, but you're not yet a voting member.
Okay, let me change my name. Thank you.
Okay. Our procedures for today, this is an open meeting. I will give preference to members who want to speak, but as time allows, non-members may be allowed to speak as well. The only major agenda item is to discuss the reopening, what we know about it, and see if there's anything we'd like to weigh in on. Joel Molina, the Vice President for University Relations, has kindly agreed to join us in 40 minutes from now for the last 15 minutes, so he will be able to handle questions. But in the meanwhile, it's our internal discussion together with guest observers. And with that as preface, I think I will open it up. I would ask that you keep your microphone muted unless you are given the floor. And if you want to speak, please put your hand up and I will do my best to track that. And if I lose it, Pilar will tell me I'm losing it and help me out. Gina and Wendy have suggested, and I think everyone's done this, that if you're a UA member, that you change your name so that UA are your first initials before anything else, and that makes it easier for us to track if we were to take a vote. With that, Logan, I see your hand is up. You have the floor.
Thanks, Bob. I just wanted to quickly ask if I could add a late addition to the agenda and if we would consider talking about the tuition increase as well as staff and faculty cuts in pay as well.
I think that's fair game as part of the reopening, if you wish. My suggestion is we discuss what we can before Joel comes on. At 3, we probably do need to quit. There's a faculty senate meeting soon after this that some people have conflicts with. So. But I think that's fair game to discuss.
So with my hand being the only one up, I'm happy to get things started if that's all right.
Go ahead, sure.
All right, so I have some major concerns about students right now with uncertainty about housing, especially. I know that freshmen right now, it looks like we are giving them housing as well as international students, but I've spoken to some undergrads and they're putting in dating profiles that they need places to quarantine. And I'm just scared about safety. I'm scared about the community in general. and people putting themselves in unsafe situations just to be able to come back to campus. So I just wanted to raise that major concern. The dating profile one has been, I'm horrified by that. And I am hoping that there's something else that we can do. As for staff and faculty cuts, those I was told by a professor, and that's understandable, but at the same time, I wish it was communicated to the rest of the community. That wasn't something that was like shared outside of Martha Pollack taking a cut. And now I'm trying to think. For now, I think tuition. I also think that raising tuition in the middle of a pandemic, when that was voted in January and we weren't pretty much completely online, it should just be potentially reconsidered or something that we should talk about as a body, because for me, all of my classes are online, and I know the undergraduate students, I believe that they're getting their schedule in 2 days. I just got mine today. So I just think that the tuition increase, I understand that it's something that usually happens yearly, but this year is unprecedented and we're already dealing with so much. So I'm hoping that's something that this assembly can work through also. Thank you.
I think that's something that's certainly worth discussing. It's my understanding that the undergraduates will be notified on Friday as to what the time availability of classes are and whether they're virtual or in person. And of course, none of us have inside information as to what that's going to look like. I will say that for our department, my department, Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, we typically teach about 800 students per semester, and we will be teaching 16 of those in person and the other almost 800 virtually. So that's two of other departments that'd be of interest. Charlie.
This Friday, you can simply find out the course lineup and the modality. Next week, Monday, hopefully the time and place.
Okay, so just the modality. It'll be interesting, I think, to see the reaction of students when they, you know, see what the modality is. Again, my expectation is there's not going to be a huge amount of in-person classes, but that could be wrong, of course. Another, let me just throw out some issues, since I've been hearing a lot from staff, faculty, students, also parents. The issues I've heard about the most are the issues of equity for the change in plan for those students who are coming from one of the COVID hot states, if they are not economically well off, it's some question whether it's fair to them compared to those who have more means. So that's something I think we could discuss. And the mental health characteristics. As we all know, Cornell has worked hard but also struggled to provide adequate mental health in the past. And every single person I know is more stressed than I've ever seen before. And the thought of bringing back a lot of quarantined students and students who are struggling with how to deal with that, as well as the virtual classes, would seem to be a large issue. And it's not clear to me that the university is doing much more than they have in the past in terms of providing counseling services. If that's something we could bring up with Joel. Maybe someone else has insights that, and if there are other issues of concern, please raise your hand and let's hear what they are. Cody.
Yeah, so one thing that I was concerned about based on just discussions with other students and like some of the sort of online chatter that I've seen on places like Reddit or like, is just a lack of appreciation of the requirement that the requirement for quarantining for 2 weeks is a sort of a state requirement, and it's something that is you know, it's not something that you, that people should be going out of their way to, you know, try to find ways around it, or, you know, like looking for, you know, like this is something that is very serious, and it, like, it goes beyond just Cornell. And it seems like there just hasn't been enough communication that this is a serious requirement that, that needs to be taken at face value by students, and it's coming from the state and will be enforced by Cornell.
Good point. Charlie, you had your hand up, but then it went down again.
Yeah, I was just looking up some stats. I got this from Lisa. These are the these are courses and the percent that have some in-person component. Lectures, 31%. Discussions, 27%. Seminars, 15%. Labs, 63%. Then another split based on the level of the course. One, again, these are courses that have some component that's in person. 1,000 level, 23%, 2,000 level, 31%, 3,000 level, 35%, 4,000 level, 33%, 5,000 level, 38%, and 6,000 level, 22%. If you go to the Senate agenda page, you'll see this stuff and some other things.
Okay. Thank you. That's interesting. I haven't seen those data before. Sounds like my department's on the lower end of that. Cody?
Yeah. Another thing that I wanted to mention based on just the discussion about course modality is I was told by, when discussing this with my department, which is the physics department, that one of the pieces, like one of the guiding things that the university had communicated to them was the desire that every student should have the option of taking at least one course in person. And that there was not a lot of additional guidance in terms of what that means from a practical sense. And this was a couple of weeks ago, so it's somewhat before we've seen massive increases in cases, case rates again, and before this recent change from the university on providing places to quarantine. And so as a point of information, I was wondering if anyone is aware of additional guidance, or if the university has sort of walked back that discussion, or if that point that was communicated to me by our department was just misleading. If anyone has information.
Charlie might want to weigh in on that. My understanding is, and I'm not in the central information flow on this by any means, is that university would like us to offer that, and they're encouraging the departments to encourage the faculty and teaching assistants to do at least that level of in-person, but they also left it up. I mean, in the end, they've left it up to individual faculty for sure for the courses, and then department by departments are letting teaching assistants either decide or not. So for instance, in my department, no teaching assistant will teach in person unless they agree to and want to. So there's a goal, which is good. We all agree it would be better to have, for the students to have more in-person contact. On the other hand, it's more of a health risk for the instructors. So weighing that turns out to be an individual decision, and we'll see how it plays out. Charlie, do you want to add anything to that? Or?
Yeah, I don't, the idea of trying to get every student at least one in-person class, you can imagine the scheduling problem with that. These classes are going to be probably super popular, there'll be wait lists and things like that. So I'm not sure how they can torque the pre-registration thing in that direction, but I've certainly heard that as an admirable objective. But if the stats I just read off there, like only one fifth of the courses will have some component. You know, if you're taking five courses, you can do the math. You can see that there are going to be a lot of unhappy campers.
Jeff, give the floor.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to add on to some of the conversation that Cody was talking about. And with this, I think some of the real challenges that came through this process, right, that, you know, Bob, for you, for your department, there was an opportunity for instructors to choose their teaching modality, but this wasn't necessarily a university-wide policy. In fact, it was throughout the summer an initiative ran by graduate students to ask their departments for that support. And I think that this process also kind of lengthened the course enrollment period, right? And I think that obviously this is stuff in the past and we need to look a little bit forward, but had the university adopted something like a opt-in policy for teaching modality, I think that would have really been more effective and efficient in figuring out which courses can be in person and then having enrollment come out earlier than Friday, for example. But again, I think this is just kind of an ongoing theme throughout this process of how we're kind of going along as things go and not inherently thinking kind of ahead of time with some of these decisions.
Well, the planning process is tough. I'm glad I'm not in charge of it, to be honest. You know, in terms of where we are, I think it's better to think forward. I mean, AA, we have some time to hear from Joel Molina in less than half an hour and ask him some tough questions if we like. So think about what those might be. But also, to the extent the UAA can have positive suggestions or things we'd really like the administration to pay a little bit more attention to, you know, perhaps we can have some influence around the edges. Rehashing what's gone good and bad, I don't think will be particularly useful either for us or in terms of influencing them, but that's my personal opinion. Logan.
I just have a quick question. Bob, you might be able to answer, or Charlie, or even Jeff. I received an email from a teaching assistant, a graduate student, that said that after each in-person class, they would be required to clean and sanitize the space. I was wondering if that's currently what the thought process is for professors and teachers' assistants, that they would be cleaning after each class.
Plan is to have a thorough employees clean each room once a day, somewhere around the middle of the day. I believe there's going to be 30 minutes in between classes, which I have trouble with because in the sense that it's cold November morning, and where you go in between your first and second class, where are you going to congregate? So I don't see much in that game. There was discussion about giving students supplies, much as you might get going onto an airplane to clean your seat and so on. There are logistical problems with that now because it's so late. So that's kind of where that sits.
Okay, thanks, Charlie.
Again, I'm going to give priority to UA members to speak if they want, but I don't see any hands at the moment. And if there are others of you who are listening in and would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can put up your hand.
I'd like to open this. Oh, sorry, someone else had their hand up.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Joel's in charge of communication, and if I were to identify one common thread across all constituencies, it's that there's been a lack of transparency and communication has been extremely poor. For example, I've worked for now 3 weeks trying to get the inner group to agree to the following, which to me is extremely simple. Anytime you, for example, do a mass mailing to students, CC the faculty. It's as simple as that. It's a 30-second thing. They seem to have problems with that. So I really find that unfortunate. I think it's caused a lot of angst. Here's an example of the consequences. So say Ryan and Mike send out an email to students. The student immediately gets on the horn, calls their advisor. The advisor doesn't know what's going on. The advisor feels stupid. The advisee thinks, what's going on at Cornell? Don't the faculty know what's going on? And you undermine confidence. You keep undermining confidence. And it's because, and I think when we look at those low percentage of in-class teaching, now I know there are health concerns there, but I think those numbers have been beaten down further because there's a lack of confidence. I think a lot of faculty were hesitant about committing to in-person instruction because they didn't know what their classroom would look like. again, I'm not just saying, I was on one of these committees, and I'm not saying that I have all the answers, but I really urge them, for example, to set up a sample classroom. Think about a model home, a home development. You have a model home so that the person can go visit and see what it looks like. I know a lot of faculty who are hesitant to commit to or to think positively about it because they didn't know what the lay of the land was. They didn't know the geometry of their classroom. They didn't know about plexiglass and so on. So that undermines confidence. I've spent a month trying to get them to get major signage on campus. I'm talking billboard signage at maybe the 10 or 11 streets that come into campus with a simple message. Masks are required when you are on campus, period. This stuff, you go around now, to my knowledge, there's lots of small signs that say you need masks if you're on the sidewalk. Oh, okay, well, I'll just stand off the sidewalk. You have to have a clear policy. I'm going through the Ivy League schools, Princeton, Penn, Yale, Harvard, Brown, all have, you wear a mask, period, when you're on campus. We have been among the more adventuresome and with our reopening plans, and we have perhaps the weakest mask policy. In other words, you have to have a mask with you, that's fine, but you only have to use it if social distancing is impossible. What's the consequence of that? Well, the consequence of that is if I see some students without masks, I have to hesitate. I have to do a mental calculation. Are they unable to social distance? So you go down the list, to me, I'm not part of the administration, but I have a front row seat to what's going on. To me, I've seen an unnecessary undercutting of confidence. The sequence of things that they're doing to me have just reduced my confidence that things are going to play out appropriately. I was quite optimistic right in the middle of June there, but a sequence of things, I just don't, I feel it's been unfortunate. For example, the big uptick when we now have the 31 or 34 states. We knew like 3 weeks ago, stuff like that might happen. What is so hard? What is so hard about asking parents, students, and faculty saying, hey, this might happen. What do you think? It's a very simple question. What do you think we should do? Why don't you just ask, okay? Now, we have, you're all aware of what's in the last week, what's happened. So I think, Joe, there's some kind of communication philosophy out there that's really hurting us. And I think we ought to ask Joel hard questions about this. I have my own list. I can't stay too long because we have a Senate meeting quite soon after this. But I'd like to hear from you what your views from your desk or your cubicle or your dorm, whatever you set up shop, what do you see about communication? Am I way off base here? Or do you think there's something really fundamentally wrong about the transparency and the communication that we've seen?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Charlie. I somehow assumed you were more in the know than I, but it is disturbing, lack of transparency. I'm going to open the floor to non-members, at least for a bit, unless more members pop forward, and I'm going to go down the list as I see it. I would ask that if, as I give you the floor, that you take no more than a minute or two in the interest of our time. And with that, Tim Lettermoser.
Thanks so much. I'm actually kind of glad that Charlie said all that because that I'd like to echo pretty much all of that, that the communication issues have across the board, there's been unforced errors. You know, the opt-in policy for TAs that Jeff mentioned, if we had started with that, there would have been more trust, there would have been more confidence in the first place instead of having to fight for it for 2 months. The communication issues, I am regularly forwarding emails to my own department's COVID research reactivation committee that affects their ability to do their job because they never received those emails. I should also note that when we ask the university how these research reactivation committees over the summer are actually intended to enforce rules, those rules don't exist. The rules that were supposed to start at the end of May, we were told point blank don't exist, which really affects my confidence in any rules for the fall. And just to reiterate on the transparency issue, Dean Van Loan, if I understood you correctly, classes start in less than 30 days and we do not know how classrooms will be cleaned?
That is exactly how they'll be cleaned. In other words, the idea of having a crew come in, you know, how much time do they need? So you can only do, so much in a certain period, that in any given break, 1/5 of the classrooms will be cleaned. It's a work in progress. I think all the different possibilities are on the table, but which one is chosen, what mix is chosen, I don't think is exactly known right now.
Okay.
The idea of students actually cleaning their place because it puts the responsibility, it's a nice reminder of your personal responsibility. I thought it'd be fairly to do something like you do during graduation where you have free water bottles all over the place, readily accessible cleaning material. So when you walk in a classroom, you can wipe down your desk and so on. I like that kind of model. It was sort of like the airline model. But that's a work in progress. And as I mentioned, I was just on a meeting where that was discussed. The logistics of giving students the opportunity to clean, or the students in the class the opportunity to clean their spaces, I think it's sort of too late to execute that in terms of outfitting every class with paper towels and cleaning materials. So I think, okay. It's definitely been on the table for months, but as of like 1 hour ago, it was still kind of under debate.
Nathan Satoru.
Hi, thank you. I had a question, I guess, also involving similar issues about uncertainty about how different situations will be handled. In particular, I'm aware that all classes have a plan of some sort in place to transition to being fully online if necessary. But as far as I know, there hasn't been a lot of communication about what exactly will trigger a class to move online, who the decision makers will be for that, and whether the decision makers will have the relevant information that they need, because apparently due to privacy issues, instructors may not know, for instance, when students in their class are testing positive for COVID. So I'd like, if any of you know more information about that, I would love to hear it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Why don't we go on to Robert Platt, and then maybe Kelly, and we can come back and see if we can answer some of those. So Robert.
Two very quick points. One is the UA is charged with jurisdiction over codes and judicial, and I know there's going to be a significant enforcement component with this behavioral compact, and I would urge the UA to get involved in assuring proper procedures and due process in enforcement of the behavioral compact. The second one, on behalf of your donor base, the most controversial element has been this proposed 20 basis point surcharge on all of the endowment accounts to steer money away from donor intent, so that money that we gave for faculty support is being diverted to undergraduate financial aid, or money that we gave for improving campus life is being diverted for undergraduate financial aid. Cornell's never done that. I hope you all take a very careful look at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that input. Kelly Zamudio.
Hi, Kelly Zamudio. I'm a faculty member. I'm a concerned citizen just listening in. I wanted to bring up the point of sort of the influx of students coming in, expected to quarantine on their own, and just mention the fact that there is another model. Ithaca College has adopted a model where they basically do not receive students from high-risk states. So I wanted to bring that forward and see what people think about that. It's a pretty tough policy. It basically says stay away. But the one thing that it does do is relieve pressure on the community in terms of the possibility of people bringing in cases, right? But the second thing it does is that it discriminates on the basis of risk of the state where the student is coming from, rather than discriminating based on student means. So this issue of equity that Bob brought up, I think, is a really serious one. Students who can't afford to feed themselves, who can't find a hotel nearby, who can't you know, who can't basically quarantine, can't afford to do so, are basically being told to stay home. And that is really a terrible policy in terms of equity.
Thank you for that, Kelly. We're going to take one more non-UA member, and then I'm going to go back to UA members because I'm seeing more hands. So Catherine Holmes.
Hi, thank you. So I definitely echo all of the concerns everyone has said. And as far as the quarantine, the new quarantine rules, I think there's a lot that we all have questions about there, and especially like how this won't be potentially a public health crisis if students come into town with no plans to quarantine or confusion about how to quarantine. And as far as I know, there's no plan now anymore for the university to coordinate that. And so I guess I'd like more clarity on like how they're supporting like the local health department, because I assume all of the burden now falls on Tompkins County Health Department to quarantine students and make sure they're quarantining. And then I also wanted to echo concerns about that we don't have sick leave as graduate students. And I also don't know what the situation is for faculty or staff who are teaching. And so knowing what that is would be really important. And so far the communication we've gotten is that basically if you have to be out for an extended length of time, you have to take an unpaid leave of absence. So that's really concerning. And I also just, as someone who doesn't, you know, is new to the body, I'd really appreciate knowing like what you all see the assembly doing as far as advocating on these different questions, because obviously there are a ton of different concerns, and there's been, from my point of view, repeated breaches of trust in addressing concerns throughout the summer. And so I'd like to know what you all feel you can do and what you want to do. And as a grad student, I am really hoping that you advocate for all of us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. You should also be talking to the Graduate Professional Student Assembly, obviously. And what the University Assembly does, we represent all aspects of the campus, and we're the only shared governance group that does. So it allows us to communicate across employees, faculty, students. And if we have a strong consensus, then I can communicate that to the provost and president and others. So we'll see what comes out of this meeting today and what the assembly would like me to do regarding that. But also simply having the vice president for university relations come and talk to us at the end of this meeting today is a way to do some of this messaging. So that alone, I think will be helpful. At least I hope it is. Rennell Menza.
Thanks. So it seems to me what one of the major problems is that the university is overestimating its capacity to facilitate a return to campus. I mean, you look at, for example, the rollout of the roster that had been promised or said to have been delivered early June, then it got pushed back to July, now it's August. And then another example is with the quarantining, that they would have provided housing or accommodations for students who needed to quarantine, and now they don't have the capacity to do that. So I'm wondering who and how these decisions are being made, because they don't, I think someone said this before, don't seem to be very forward thinking or comprehensive, and that the policies that are made address what the state and federal guidelines are, but they're not looking at Cornell's capacity to actually carry them out. So my suggestion would be that the university look at other reopening plans from compatible universities. You look at Princeton, that's doing a staggered model where freshmen and juniors come in the fall and sophomores and seniors in the spring. So that way it lowers the toll and the number of students that the university has to account for, and the number of people that are actually circulating campus. I think this push to fully reopen in the wake of all of the new developments undermines what the university is trying to do, which is to deliver instruction in the most equitable and universal way possible.
Thank you for that. I agree, taking a comprehensive look at what our peer institutions are doing. Presumably the administration's doing that, but I haven't seen the analysis. And just to throw out one of the suggestions I've heard repeatedly over the last few days is that is that we considered Cornell going totally virtual in the fall and just doing a better job to really do it right in the spring in the context of what other institutions are doing. We seem to be sort of staggering along at the moment in a way which is causing us all concern. Jeff.
Sorry, I just wanted to bring up two things. I think the first one was connected to, you know, the frustrations of the announcement last week regarding inability for housing for students who need to quarantine. It's not an issue of equity also in terms of students coming in and not being afforded. It's also an issue of compliance, right? If you know that you may not be able to be in an actually safe environment to quarantine, you're more willing to not follow those rules. And if we're basing all of our, you know, the fundamental basis of how successful fall will be based on number of contacts and also testing frequency and compliance with the model, this only kind of brings it down. The other thing I want to bring up is kind of what we can do, because I think that there are some strengths and limitations with what the UA can do next. And I think that it is very time sensitive, but given that a lot of our powers are, you know, symbolic, but there might be a good starting point to rally other groups on campus or, you know, the individual other assemblies to really push the administration on reconsidering some of these things. I don't know what the next steps are per se, but I'm willing to hear what might be the best option to give us the biggest voice.
Yeah, I think that's critical. I don't know what the next steps are either. To be honest, I don't really know what we should be doing, but we're just talking today is a start and it is timely, so we need to move quickly towards what would make sense. Jenna. Jenna, you have the floor. I'm probably mispronouncing your name, I'm sorry.
Hey,
go ahead, Uche.
What, does the university have any contingencies?
You're breaking up. Can I suggest you turn off your video and just talk to us? Because sometimes that helps with the bandwidth.
How's this?
That's better, much better. Not hearing you again, though.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. What I was asking was, in the event that, there is a major breakout on campus, does the university have any contingency plans in the event that maybe they need to send students home? Like, are there any plans that may be released? Just because, like, I know some students have come to me, you know, wondering, you know, when the university shut down and had to send all the students home, I know that that was like a huge point of like anxiety and caused a lot of issues a lot for a lot of students. And like, I know a lot of students would like to know like what the university plans to do, like in case of, you know, A situation happens or B situation, C situation, and would like to see those things released.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I don't know. Charlie, you have the floor.
Yeah, let me actually address that. Then I have two little caveats I'd like to mention. So one thing I want to ask Joel is, let's just call it bad news. So for example, suppose you had, let's say, a very detailed exit plan if we have a breakout. Now, I'm just thinking out loud here, a parent reads that and say, and now suddenly they get nervous because, Cornell wouldn't be thinking about an exit plan unless it really might happen, okay? So there is the psychological reaction to this stuff has to be figured in there. So we do have to cut people a little bit of slack. And on that general subject, again, this is unprecedented, right? And we do have to cut people slack. There've been a lot of screw ups. We've just gone through them, a bunch of them, and so on. But we do have to remember that it is a very difficult situation. But then getting to like what Kelly says, I so much of it is transparency. In other words, if 3 weeks ago, they came out saying, look, this is headed in a terrible direction, and we're going to be confronting a fork in the road. And one fork is the Ithaca College method, and the other fork is what we've chosen. I'd like to hear from you while we still have some time to reason about that. Then all of a sudden, I have a much greater respect in the final decision, even if I'm not part of it. Literally, I mean, whenever you have policies, you have to engage those who are affected. When I think about, you know, a month ago when there was the discussion about TAs and accommodation and so on, I think Jeff or somebody mentioned that if it was an opt-in policy, they probably would have had more takers because you sort of feel you're in control and gee, the university really respects my judgment. And so, you know, I respect their judgment too. So it's some counterintuitive less is more things there that we do have to keep in mind.
Thank you for that. Gene, I assume Joel is not with us yet. If you could alert me when he comes on, that would be great. Otherwise, we'll just
sure continue. Will. I don't see him yet. He should be signing on.
Keep an eye out and let me know when he comes on.
Yep.
I'd appreciate it. Jeff, floor is yours.
Okay. This might probably be the last thing I say before Joel comes in, but I think the kind of combining the conversations that, you know, Uche and Charlie was saying, I think there needs to be more transparency of the checklist from the university about when we will go online, right? I think right now there's it's a little more ambiguous about what are the conditions for that, because that will give reassurance for students in preparing for transitioning away if they need to, or going into remote learning, and helpful for parents and helpful for instructors as well, right? I think that if there's a clear scenario in which we would opt towards that, it should be kind of communicated to everyone. And I know that this is not a format that's usually used. I haven't really seen these kind of checklists in the US, but in, you know, countries where they have had a handle on this, for example, in annals of public health, Taiwan set out a set of guidelines for reopening campus during spring, in which they set out the scenarios of what happens when an outbreak happens on campus. And so there are guidelines out there that may or may not be applicable to our context, but I think as long as everybody on campus are aware of it, is probably the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Uche.
Yeah, and to just kind of like echo off of Jeff, and you know, my reasoning for bringing that up is that, you know, with so many students, like, you know, coming to me and even myself, you know, worried about like our lives, our livelihoods, you know, worried about our families and, you know, friends and like, you know, worried about this pandemic, this virus that can kill us. Like, yes, I know a lot of students would like to know, like, you know, what is the university going to do in the event of case A or case B? And they want to be reassured. And like Jeff said, like, I know I've seen other universities and institutions putting out contingency plans in terms of like these different situations. So I do expect a lot out of the university in, you know, being proactive and planning for these things.
Excuse me, Bob. Joel has joined.
Okay, to Joel then. Joel.
Hi, Bob.
Welcome. Joel's the Vice President for University Relations. Thank you for agreeing to talk to us. We've been on for 45 minutes. Let me just very, very quickly summarize and then
Sure.
turn it over to you and for questions. Not surprisingly, our members, which reflect the Cornell community, are feeling a lot of anxiety, and people have expressed a lot of particular concerns over particular issues. We could go through those. People can ask individual questions. There is a common theme, though, that's popping up, which directly relates to you, and that is on the communication. And I think there's a thought that our anxiety, which would be bad under any circumstances, is aggravated by inadequate communication to the parts of the campus that we participate in and represent, and perhaps insufficient transparency, for better word, insufficient engagement outside of the committees that are making these decisions. And we understand the uniqueness of the world at the moment and the problems facing Cornell. And as Charlie was saying, we certainly have to give everyone a lot of slack because it's difficult to make decisions in this. But nonetheless, we do feel things can be handled better, and we're hoping to work with you and the administration and figuring out how to make them work better. So With that, I'll hand it to you, and then we can take questions.
Okay. Sure. Let me just briefly, well, thank you for the opportunity. I hope you know that I'm happy to participate any time at any meeting in any capacity. So I appreciate the opportunity. In a nutshell, these are, to use a worn out phrase, unprecedented times, especially when it comes to communications. At a institution like Cornell, which is already highly decentralized, throw in anxiety, throw in constantly changing parameters in terms of guidelines, progression of the virus nationally. Communications is it's a complex proposition these days. I think we've done a pretty good job, certainly more room for improvement, but a pretty good job marshaling together what are, you know, probably dozens of individuals whose natural instinct is to go ahead and communicate on their own. We've tried very hard to try to coordinate. We currently have this set of implementation committees. Charlie Van Loan is a part of those discussions. Among the tasks in those discussions is to make sure we all have a sense of who needs to communicate what then, and to make sure that everyone's on board and fully supportive of these communications that often include not just isolated elements of details, but oftentimes a dizzying amount of detail. Add to that the challenges of having to make sure that all of our messages are cleared with critical partners like the County Health Department, and communications is not the easy lifestyle that it used to be. And I say that tongue in cheek because it was never an easy proposition. So let me just, you know, commit to this group. Absolutely, there's always more improvement to be made. I welcome feedback. To the extent that we are missing opportunities or unintentionally ignoring important elements, please let me know. One of the things that's a reality, I am on email 24/7, so don't worry about my not seeing or getting back to you. I'd be happy to spend some time with specific questions if that would be helpful. Sure. But again, you know, this is a work in progress. We are facing every day new parameters. And I certainly sense as we get closer to the beginning of the semester, tensions are peaking, and they will continue to. I think we all have a responsibility to all of our colleagues across the university and frankly across the greater community to try to listen, which is what I'm doing today, to try to provide in as transparent a manner as possible the information we have, and frankly not be afraid to say, well, I need to get back to you. I don't have that answer. Trust me, there are dozens of questions being bandied about every hour. And many times we haven't had the opportunity to think through them. The good news is we have a lot of really smart people who are giving this a lot of thought. I think we can all be extremely proud of the amount of work that so many have put into getting us to where we are today. We have a science-based approach to tackling what is a very challenging proposition of bringing all of these people back from all parts of the country to hopefully have a healthy and successful semester. So let me stop there. I would love to delve okay. into a few specifics with the 9 minutes we have.
Sure, thank you. UA members, I'm gonna give you preference. If you have a question, please put up your hand and I'll pay attention. Charlie?
Hi, Joe. So you've probably heard this from me before over the last few weeks, but the subject here is like, suppose your team sends out a mass mailing to undergraduates or graduate students, just the students. And to me, it seems like if faculty should be automatically CC'd on that. And I really mean in the classical sense. To me, it's not a heavy work overload. But I sense that there must be some school of thought that says that's not a good idea because it really hasn't happened. I mean, and so when you look at an email that's going to one of the constituencies, what goes through your team's head about who else should be aware of this?
Sure. And let me say at the outset, Charlie, that the feedback that you're very forthcoming in providing helps ensure that we're continually reassessing this. There are certain student-specific messages. I'll give an example. One went out yesterday just to those students from these travel advisory states who are planning to live on campus with very detailed housing instructions. I don't think that's a message that needs to be sent to faculty and staff. I'm happy to hear a contrary view, but there are clear decisions where I don't think anyone's going to feel left out. Admittedly, there are instances, and there was one last week. I have the easy excuse of not having been here. I was on vacation when this happened. But clearly, it's one of the things I've spent most of my time over the last 3 days talking about and fixing, which was the message to students about the shift in the travel advisory quarantine. Clearly, that is a message that should have gone to the entire Cornell community. And I think going forward, those types of messages will include faculty and staff. By way of one example, as you know, Charlie, and hopefully all of you have seen, the provost and Ryan Lombardi did have an op-ed providing additional clarity on that subject that ran in the Daily Sun last evening. I did provide that to you, Charlie. I don't know if you sent it to faculty. I certainly hope that you did. That's the type of information chain that we want to make sure is robust.
Thank you. I have another question if no one else wants
to. Sure, no one else has their hand up, go for it.
So this is a question, you must have a theory of bad news. So for example, I'm sure somewhere people have thought about exit plans. You know, what if we have to empty out the dorms? But you can't read about it anywhere. So when you look at a message that's going out and you know it's gonna be read by parents, do you analyze it in terms of how it might undermine their confidence, even though you may just be relaying the facts?
Thank you. It's an easy question to answer. You know, people may think of communications as PR flax. Let me be quite clear. I have no concern about bad news being transmitted if that bad news is important. There's a message going out later today, I hope, from Martha, not just to faculty, staff, and students, but to the entire greater Ithaca community. Very much a forthcoming, here's what we're doing, here are the potential outcomes. And it has some level of detail from the Fraser modeling that some may consider, oh, well, that's a rather large number of potential cases. But that's a case where we want to be transparent. So I don't have a layer of, gee, how will it be perceived, especially when it comes to parents. I'm a parent of college-aged kids. I want administrators to be as upfront and forthcoming as possible. Frankly, putting out that potential bad news enables us to have the back and forth to understand and to give clarity to help alleviate whatever concerns that news might create.
Thanks.
Cody, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so thanks for answering some of these questions. I wanted to bring up a couple of thoughts. And they're both kind of centered around the idea of transparency, which is, I think, something that a lot of people have felt is lacking in some of the decision making. And that comes up in a couple of different areas. One is there's a theme that I've heard, which is about people not having a chance to give input and to like help to try to, you know, influence the decision making and express views and to see how the different options are weighed. And then there's also a sense that because there isn't a ton of transparency about forward options and how things might turn out, even though it's something that's outside of a lot of people's control, it often gives the impression that things sort of that we're reacting to changes and we're reacting to a particular, the state of things at a particular moment. And I'm wondering how you can, you know, how you see that we can try to bring more of the community into the loop and try to give more opportunities for people to understand the decision-making process and voice concerns about the decision-making process.
Sure. I don't think I'm departing at all from how any of my colleagues in senior leadership would respond when I say that all of us would welcome opportunities to talk about our processes, to talk about expectations to receive input. I mean, just one example, I mean, I've participated just myself in at least 18, nice dozen and a half, you know, town hall forums with various constituencies, mostly because of my community relations hat with residents in our neighboring communities. I find every single one of them to be educational. I know that Mike and Martha have spent a lot of time, of course, when invited, with the Faculty Senate. Those are discussions that I know have resulted in improved discussions and considerations within the leadership. And I would encourage you as the UA, invite us more. I would be happy at every meeting to spend 15 minutes, seriously. I'd be happy to be a part of every UA meeting if you found it valuable. And likewise, I would not be surprised whether it's Ryan Lombardi or Mary Opperman or Joanne DiStefano. Reach out. I think everyone has an appreciation and an admiration for shared governance. Now, that doesn't mean that we can stop the decision-making process and allow for, you know, pure democratic thinking. You know, that in an ideal world would be wonderful, but we do have to move forward with decisions. But absolutely, you have a role to play, and I would fully support your being able to exercise that role, especially in terms of having greater insight into the thinking and the processes that are before us.
Thank you for that answer. I appreciate that. As you know, we don't normally meet during the summer. I called this special meeting because there's enough concern after last Friday that it seemed good to start to get engaged. We probably should have been doing this earlier, but we'll get on top of things more now. Yeah. We probably have time for one more question. Adam Howell?
Hey, Joel. Thanks for being here. Yeah. This may be a little bit outside of your wheelhouse. I'm not sure. The financial models that were presented several months ago, you know where we're at on those. It seems to me that the situation has muddled the forecasting on that a little bit, but I just wanted to check to see if you had any new knowledge on those.
I don't have any new knowledge on it. My sense is we will know more at the end of this semester. I know in Martha's latest communication, especially around the pause in retirement benefits and in the contract college salary reductions, that we were very forthcoming in saying we're going to assess in 6 months and see. But you know, this is a fiscal year budget impact estimate, and we need to wait and see how it plays out. We still don't know how many students will actually be here. The shift in quarantine process last week, Ryan Lombardi told me it was about a $17 million hit to his budget. So this is a constantly evolving, and we're not surprised. Everything that shifts with this virus nationally that has an impact on our procedures and processes will likely have a financial impact. Suffice it to say, we are very focused on minimizing financial impact to the extent possible, and we're all hoping that it will be even more minimal than anticipated.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
We are at 3 o'clock, which is the time that I had specified for the meeting. I know other people have obligations soon. So
I am happy to stay on for a few more minutes if that would be helpful, or we can reschedule for another time. I'm flexible. Yep.
Are there further questions? I'm not seeing any at the moment. My suggestion, and this is to the UA as a whole, is that I will try to summarize some of our discussion. I heard a lot of commonalities. We haven't asked for any formal action at the moment, but I will try to summarize it into a short little statement. If you have parts that you want to add, please send them to me by email this afternoon or tonight. I'll try to get something written in the morning. And then we'll circulate it through the assembly, and if people are amenable, we'll share it back with Joel and the administration in that way. I think it probably also makes sense to call another special meeting, certainly before the semester starts, certainly within 2 weeks, next week perhaps. So also send me your feedback by email as to how you'd like to proceed on that, and I'll try to act. So unless I hear otherwise at the moment, no formal actions, but Logan.
Yeah, I'd like to move to extend the meeting by about 10 minutes for the UA to discuss possible further action rather than just have email communication.
Okay, is there a second to that?
I second.
Okay. Why don't we just proceed for 10 minutes? And Joel said he could stay on a bit, but...
Would you like me? I'm not sure if I'm wanted or if you'd prefer me not
to... You're always wanted, but I think what we really need to do is to figure out how we get our act together at the moment.
Okay, so I'll leave you to that, but...
seeing you virtually, Joel.
Yes, yeah, it's nice to see all of you.
Thank you for joining us.
And, yes, I hope everyone and their families and friends are well, and thanks for all you do. Talk soon.
Thank you. Take care. Okay, yes, so how would you like us to proceed? And there are two issues. We can have more meetings, so let me know when we should have more meetings. I can simply call those, but I don't want to unless people want to meet. And secondly, how to act on what we've pulled together today. And I see a lot of commonalities, not that much disagreement, really. So it seems to me we should try to pull that together and convey it in some form. Thoughts? Logan, your hand's still up. No one else's hand is up.
Yeah. So my general idea is that we can draft a document that's more informal that would go to administration that just talks to the commonalities and our concerns and potential suggestions. I think suggestions would be a good idea. The other alternative is to go forward with some type of formal resolution. So I am just hoping that in this time we could at least just get a plan of which of those we'd like to go the more informal or formal route so that we're all prepared for our next meeting together.
I'm happy to do either one. My sense is that an informal document, which I say reflects our consensus, probably would have as much impact as a resolution and might be better received in some ways, but I'm open to what the UA wants to do.
Would you be open to a working document that we could potentially all look at the same time, Bob?
Sure, yeah. I think we should try to get it out quickly is my only issue. I actually have to write a proposal that's due tomorrow as well. So I have a little bit of a constraint, but I will try to consolidate my notes out of this at least. But as I say, I won't get everything right. I'll leave some things out. And if people want to add extra language, I don't like doing Google Docs. I'm terrible at handling it. So I will probably produce a rough draft and then ask Pilar if you're willing to take it over to coordinate the interaction beyond that. Does that work for you, Pilar?
Sure, I can help, yep.
Thank you. I'm incompetent in such things and I'm working out of a porch in a rental home instead of my even normal home office, which is a bigger constraint, so. Jeff.
Yeah, I think I second that approach just because one, it kind of, given everything being time sensitive, I think it would help us give out a message as soon as possible. I think the most important thing is kind of showing that it's the entirety of the UA and the messaging that it is all of our constituents individually as a group addressing these concerns. But yeah, I'm totally okay with a working document online.
What sort of time frame would people like? Because I say I can consolidate notes probably by noon tomorrow, but then if people need to weigh in, should we try to have something to send off by Monday? Does that work for people?
I was going to suggest Friday afternoon, just
this since, Friday?
Yeah, if that's okay. Possible for us. My other question is, since I agree with the informal document being the best way to go about this as an assembly, but will we then be voting on this informal document? So should we set a time potentially to like vote via email, and do we need a motion for that?
We probably do need a motion for that.
So then I am going to move that we draft an informal document to the administration regarding the concerns of the university assembly, and that we will vote via online means.
And we'll do so by the, you want to propose a time?
I would like to propose by Friday at 1 p.m., but if people are if somebody would like me to amend to Monday, I think that Monday is probably safe also. I'm just of the mindset that the faster we get things out, the better.
Right. I agree, but I want to give people enough time to participate. And I cannot pick it up again. I'm tied up the rest of today, so I can't pick it up till tomorrow morning. Any other thoughts on the timing? I don't see any hands.
I second Logan's motion.
For Friday at, what did we say, 1? Okay, so so the plan is I will draft something as soon as I can. I will get to Pilar, who will post it for input from others. If you have specific language you want me to use in the meanwhile, send it to me by email tonight or this afternoon, and then we will look at what we have individually. Friday, you need to get me your vote by email by Friday at 1. Does that capture the motion?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
Oh, it was me.
Okay, Jeff seconded. If you're in favor of that, why don't you click yes? Can someone count? I can't see. If you're opposed, say no. All right. Unless I hear
looks
otherwise.
Looks like eight yeses.
Okay.
Eight yeses.
The motion passes. So that's how we'll proceed. With that, I think we really should adjourn. Charlie has to run off to a faculty senate meeting if he hasn't already, and I have another obligation as well. But thank you all for joining today. I guess one more thing. Should we try to meet again in a week, or is 2 weeks soon enough? I don't think we should wait longer than 2 weeks. It doesn't require a motion. I can do it on my own, but give me a sense of what you'd like.
If it's all right to speak out, I think a week would be great if we get a response from administration, but I think we might want to wait until we receive some type of response from administration.
Okay. I will wait and see what happens, but call something within 2 weeks. How's that? Okay. With that, I suggest we are adjourned. Thank you for joining, and stay safe, everyone. Take care.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.